The impact of technology is prompting businesses to rethink everything from marketing to customer service. But what does the business landscape of the future actually look like? Find out when we return to the Transformation Minute from Comcast Business.
This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, December 26th. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal in New York. We're closing in on the end of the decade. So this week on Tech News Briefing, we're taking an opportunity to look back at some of the tech that shaped the 2010s. There's one piece of equipment that has more than any other transformed the way we go about our lives in the last 10 years. Today, I'm sitting down with personal tech columnist Joanna Stern to talk about, yes, you guessed it, your smartphone. That's coming up after the break.
Welcome back to the Transformation Minute from Comcast Business. How will the business landscape of the future look different from where we are today? We asked Denise Hasty, SVP of Comcast Business.
There's been a major paradigm shift across all industries. In banking, expect to see virtual financial experts for financial consulting and planning. They'll be communicating with their customers via video. At the same time, authentication will likely evolve to use biometrics. Passwords may actually become a thing of the past.
It's with you when you wake up, it puts you to sleep, it's your constant companion, and you're probably using it right now to listen to us. We're obviously talking about your smartphone. But let's do a little time travel and go back to the year 2010, the beginning of the decade. If you wanted to find your way around, you didn't pull out your phone, you pulled out a GPS. If you wanted to take a picture, you pulled out your camera. You wanted to take a ride, you called a cab. And if you wanted to watch Netflix, you opened up your mailbox because that's where your DVD was waiting for you after a few days. Smartphones weren't new, but you might not have had an iPhone. You might have had a BlackBerry or a CrackBerry, as they were called back then, because they were super, super addictive. We want to go back in time and talk about all the things that have happened with our smartphones and our technologies since 2010, and who better to do that with than our personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern. Joanna, thanks for joining us.
I'm here. I'm here to take you all back.
You recently did this. You time traveled, essentially.
Time traveled, yes.
And it turns out time traveling and going to hell are very similar.
It's true. I did go to hell with the uppercase H and a lowercase H because I decided I wanted to challenge myself to really think back to the beginning of the decade. And I was asked to write this piece for our Decade in Review section about the smartphone and the impact it's made on really humanity. I mean, that's where I sort of led. And I really said, I need to live with this tech I had in 2010 to really remember what it was like before we had fully functioning modern smartphones. And I asked my producer, said, where should we go? I need to like leave home with this. I need to leave my iPhone at home. I need to go someplace. Where should we go? And after much brainstorming, he said to me, I want you to go to hell, because I think that it's going to be like hell. And there's a small town, it's actually a township in Michigan, 60 miles out of Detroit. We're going to go there. And you're going to spend the day doing a bunch of challenges that I'm going to create for you with just your 2010 tech. The result was a lot of frustration, but also a lot of excitement and these memories of what we used to do mostly with our brains before we had smartphones.
One of the things that I thought was so interesting about your trip was that you were using a BlackBerry, which, like I said, was the CrackBerry. And BlackBerries were really common in 2010, at least for journalists. It was really...
At least for journalists. And even the market share, you look back at the numbers of 2010. And like I said, it was not new, right? The iPhone was not created in 2010. But if you look back at the market share for 2010 and what we saw in terms of smartphones, Apple was just starting to come up. Android was just starting to come up. But BlackBerry and Symbian, which was mostly on Nokia phones, those were still the main players in the smartphone race. And of course, now we have two players. And that was really the story of the decade, right? Is everyone trying to compete, to be in your pocket, to be on this small screen, which ultimately became this giant screen, and Apple and Google won out there, but it was not clear at the beginning of the decade what was going to happen. And so I was addicted to my BlackBerry, like you mentioned. I was 2010, I had a BlackBerry still. I had the BlackBerry Curve 9700 that I used in this piece, and it was only in the beginning of 2011 did I get rid of it and get an Android phone.
What changed? What happened that BlackBerry is now almost obsolete. They keep trying.
They are obsolete. RIM as a company, which made those BlackBerries, is basically obsolete when you look. They do not manufacture smartphones anymore. In fact, one of the ideas I had here was to go back to RIM, but both the former CEOs declined to be part of this piece. What really happened was this foresight from both Apple and Google about what the smartphone would become. And that really was this Swiss Army knife of things. When you look back in 2010, we were not using our phones for most part yet as GPSs. We were not using them as our primary cameras. We were not even using them really with many apps yet. 2010 was the arrival of so many big apps. Instagram, Netflix, Uber, all of these really arrived around that time. And it was really a synergy of a couple of things. The first being the hardware. The hardware was getting better and better. The phones were getting faster. The second thing were the networks. 3G and 4G pushed us ahead in big ways into apps in the early part of the decade. And then that third part was the apps. It was these companies, these developers throwing ideas against the wall, investors saying that seems like something that might be pretty good, and them creating this ecosystem. And one of the best stories, I think, that's in the story, and I talked with at length for this, is Ralph De La Vega. He was the CEO of AT&T at the beginning of the decade, and he really worked closely with Steve Jobs to bring the first iPhone out. And he was saying, we didn't know all of these things were going to happen at the same time. But when these three things really did happen at the same time, that's when we really knew it was going to be big. And he told me this story about how Travis Kalanick, who was the founder of Uber, came to AT&T and said, I need iPhones with 4G service so I can give these phones to my drivers. And it was that combination, right, of a great big idea for an app, putting these phones into cars, the 4G network behind it, and the iPhone that let that all take off.
Initially, the apps that were created for the iPhone were internal. Apple was creating its apps. How much did opening up that for third-party developers change the game?
That changed the game in a big way. And again, that happened right before 2010. Apple had released the App Store. But it was really around 2010 when you started to see these big players taking advantage of the hardware and, like I mentioned, those networks. You had Instagram coming along in 2010, seeing that the phone camera was going to be a really big thing. We were still in pretty crappy camera land, right? We all remember filters. The reason Kevin Systrom, who I spoke to for this story, he reminded me about filters. He's like, the reason we had those filters is the famous story that his wife, he went to go take a photo. He told her about all this app that he's building. She's like, I'm not going to share these photos. They look like crap. And he added filters because they looked like crap. Kevin said in the interview when I was talking with him, he talked a lot about how now you don't need filters because these cameras got crazy good over the last decade. Look at Netflix. Netflix became an app for the iPhone in 2010, again, when these phones were getting faster. They were getting faster Wi-Fi connectivity. They were getting faster processors. They were getting faster 4G networks within a couple of years to allow us to stream video everywhere. So it's really the fact that these apps were being built in concert with all of these other technologies that were coming along.
One of the things that you talk about and you show very clearly in your story, Going to Hell, is not just what things are out there, right? But how those things, how that phone, how those apps have changed the way that we live in the world, that we navigate the world. How has this technology in the last 10 years changed us?
Yeah, it's funny. An editor said to me when I was writing, she's like, I think you should write about how this has changed humanity. And I was like, well, you know, that sounds so heady and I don't know if I want to go there. I want to make this something that people remember and understand. And as I started reporting, I was like, wait, these are the things that people remember and understand. They just don't think about it that often. So those of us that can remember the days before we used this device to tell us what right and left turn to make all the time, we navigated the world by looking at a map or asking people for directions. We had like some sense of where we were in the world because we figured it out. That, for me, was the most striking thing. You know, I was definitely super frustrated that it took me basically an hour and a half longer to get someplace without my smartphone. But I was also really happy and excited that my brain still worked to do those things. Like, oh, I can call that person and they can tell me how to get there and I can write down directions. I can problem solve still. And of course, like, there's so many positives to the fact that we don't have to do these things anymore. But we also have to, like, remember that the convenience has come at the cost of so many things.
Right.
The big thing too for me was sharing photos, that experience. There's often mornings when I'm walking my dog and I look up and I'm like, oh, that's a beautiful scene. I need to take a photo of it and put it on Instagram. I hate that my brain does that, but that is where my brain goes. And I don't even consider myself like an oversharer. Maybe I share like 3 times a week. You know, I'm not someone that's like 4 times a day. And that's our urge, is when we see something, we want to share it now. And it's not even only Instagram. I have a family text chain, or I want to share it with my best friend or my wife or my editor. And I'm just constantly like, oh, I saw this thing, or I went to this place. So you wouldn't believe what I'm seeing right now. And Instagram really sparked that. Obviously, other messaging services sparked that too. But when you don't have that capability, you are really much more in the moment. And you are thinking, wow, I'm looking at this thing and I'm going to take a photo of it and I'm going to be able to look back at it later. But I'm not going to distract myself right now to share it in two steps and move on from it.
Right. You're very much in the moment. I would recommend anyone who hasn't seen the video yet to go and watch it.
I would recommend, everyone just do it.
Yeah.
Everyone get your 2010 technology out of your basement and go to hell. And if you can't go to hell, because honestly, it is a cute little place, go someplace else.
That doesn't have connectivity.
That doesn't have connectivity.
One question going forward, you look at all these smartphones, you analyze them all the time. What does 2020 and maybe the next 10 years hold for us?
I don't think 2020 or even the next couple of years holds anything as big as the beginning of the 2010s decade. I think we will start to see small pieces of technology similar to that we saw in the last decade build upon each other to start to converge to give us something bigger. And by the end of the next decade, we may have glasses or contacts that sort of project these things that are great about our phone into the real world. And it's unclear yet what that might be and what the real killer app is going to be there. But I do think those technologies are going to converge to give us something there. In the immediate future, in 2020, we're going to see faster everything, faster networks, faster phones, bigger phones. All of that's going to keep happening. What I hope the impact of this piece can have is that when it's all happening, we slow down a little bit and remember what the cost is of some of that.
Joanna Stern, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And that was your Tech News Briefing. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.